हरे कृष्णा। सो टुडे वी विल बी कंटिन्यूइंग विद द डिस्कशन ऑन श्री बिल्वा मंगल ठाकुर। यस्टरडे वी वर टॉकिंग अबाउट हिज ग्रेटेस्ट एंड मोस्ट वेल नोन बुक द कृष्ण कर्णामृत। लिटरली द वर्ड कर्णामृत मीन्स नेक्टर फॉर द ईयर्स बिकॉज कर्ण means ear and amrit means nectar. So only talks about Krishna can be nectar for the ears, nothing else. The materialistic mind likes to savor and hear worldly gossip, and that seems very nectarian, especially the mentality to hear the deficiencies and faults of others sounds very nectarian. That is the material mentality. But the spiritual mentality is to hear about Krishna, and that becomes nectar for the ears. And because he has composed such exquisite poetry glorifying Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan, and also his associates, in particular Srimati Radharani and the other gopis and gopas, and also because such glorification is perfectly consistent with the devotional principles as enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore for all Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and indeed for all Vaishnavas, the Krishna Karnamrita is such a valued book. Today we will talk a little bit about the life of Sri Bilwa Mangal Thakur. It was briefly mentioned yesterday that in the life previous to his becoming Bilwa Mangal Thakur, he had been a very advanced devotee of Lord Krishna. And it is mentioned that he had even gone up to the level of Bhava Bhakti. Bhava Bhakti is the stage just prior to Prema Bhakti, which is very, very exalted. The Bhava Bhakti stage is the stage where one develops ecstatic symptoms in love of God. One has not actually reached the highest platform of prema, but one is almost there. At this stage, which has been described very elaborately by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and summarized beautifully by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion, the different symptoms of Bhava Bhakti have been described. So certainly it is a very exalted position, but one who is in Bhava Bhakti is not 100% immune from a fall down. We see in the case of Bharat Maharaj also, this is found in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that although he had also reached a stage of Bhava Bhakti, but he also fell victim to Maya. And he gave up his devotional practices. But of course, as we hear from the Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bhikramanashosti Pratyavayo Navidyate Svalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat, that these devotional practices and the spiritual advancement that comes as a result of these practices is never destroyed, and that continues in the future lives as well. And Srila Prabhupada explains that in particular, in the Bhagavad Gita it is mentioned, Prapya Punya Kritam Lokan Ishitva Shashvati Samah Shuchi Nam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bhijayate. Those who perform devotional service in the previous life, but for some or the other reason, are not able to complete it to perfection, they get another chance in the next life where they can continue their practice in this life, in the new present life. So therefore, Bilwa Mangal Thakur, when he was born in this life, he had this previous stock of Sukriti, Bhaktyonmukhi Sukriti, of all the bhakti he had done before. He was born, therefore, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe. He was born in a wealthy Brahminical family, very cultured. But Prabhupada explains that sometimes we see that when there is a young man who is born in a very wealthy family, even if the family is very cultured, sometimes he may go wayward. He may get into bad habits. So, Bilvamangal Thakur, his name was Shilhana Mishra. He got the name Bilvamangal Goswami or Thakur later. So as a youth, he became attracted to a dancing girl, a prostitute, whose name was Chintamani. And he would visit her every day. And he became so attached that it is described that one day when the Shraddha or the death ceremony of his father was being performed, he was in a very great hurry to leave the ceremony to go to meet Chintamani. So he told the priests, make haste, I have to go. So the priests tried as far as possible to do the rituals in the shorter time span that Bilvamangal had ordered them to, and in a great hurry Bilvamangal left for the house of Chintamani. Now, at that time, it was raining torrentially, and the river Krishna, on the banks of which he lived, was flooded. The waters were flowing turbulently, and there was no boat in sight. But unmindful of this, he just plunged into the waters and started swimming across. The current was very strong, the winds and the rain were lashing very fiercely, but still his passion drove him to swim harder and harder. Finally, as he began to tire, he grasped onto something that he thought was a log of wood. And the log of wood was floating, and it took him across to the other side of the river. And later he discovered that it was not actually a log of wood, but it was a corpse, a dead human body. And he had not bothered to see, so much was he absorbed in the thought of what he was going for. So imagine if we had that kind of vision or commitment and absorption about Krishna in our minds, and we are unmindful of anything else in this world, that is some state that we can all hope to attain one day. So somehow or other, with great effort, he managed to get to the other side of the river. And then he proceeded by foot to the house of Chintamani. Chintamani had waited for some time that evening, and when she saw the thunderstorms and the fierce winds and the flooded river, she came to the conclusion that Bilvamangal will not come tonight. So she locked the rooms, she locked the windows, and she went inside. In the meanwhile, Bilvamangal arrived. He was drenched, completely exhausted, and he banged at the gate. But because of the sound of the thunder and the rustling of the trees and the noise of the wind, nothing could be heard inside. He was shouting for Chintamani standing outside, but she could not hear anything because the noise outside was so deafening. Finally, even though he was so exhausted, he resolved to climb the wall, which was very high, and to reach up to her house in that way. So the wall was very steep, but nevertheless he began climbing. And in looking out for some support, he saw something that looked like a hanging vine, like a creeper. He grabbed that and then pulled himself upwards. Only later did he realize that it was not a creeper, but it was a snake. But so absorbed had he been in trying to get to his destination that he didn't even check whether it was a snake or a creeper. He reached the top of the wall and somehow or other clambered over and fell with a heavy thud on the other side of the wall. and because it was a high wall, he must have injured himself. Hearing that sound, Chintamani came, asking who it was, and she was very, very astonished to see Bilwa Mangal in this condition. And she was wondering how Bilwa Mangal had actually managed to come in such a condition. Finally, she took him inside, and Bilwa Mangal was hanging in the condition between life and death, very precarious. And Chintamani nursed him back to health, and had she not done so, it is said, it was certain that Bilwa Mangal would have died on that evening. So somehow or other, having been brought back to some semblance of good health and strength, Chintamani started speaking to Bilwa Mangal when he was back in good consciousness, able to understand what was being spoken. And she admonished him. She said, shame on you. You come from such a cultured, learned, religious, aristocratic Brahmin family. And just look at you. As for me, well, what can I do? I'm a wicked lady, I have this wicked profession, and I understand my fallen condition. But just see what attachment you have for this bag of flesh and bones that you call Chintamani. You have risked your very life and taken unimaginable troubles to come across the river in this condition just for a little bit of bodily enjoyment. Your determination and your resolve to come here despite all odds, had that been channelized towards Krishna, the Supreme Lord, by today you would have become the greatest devotee on this planet. So when Bilwa Mangal Thakur heard himself being admonished in this way, immediately it struck a very deep chord in his heart. Because he had already previously, in other words, in the previous life, been a great devotee of the Lord, his previous devotional sentiment and inclination was immediately aroused. We see that in all our lives, if we examine our lives individually, that we will see there was some turning point when perhaps we were not in Krishna consciousness, something happened, we read a book, we met a person or saw some devotees or something like that, and that marked a turning point in our life. And from that day on, somehow or other, we came to Krishna consciousness, never to return. So that turning point is a very, very critical point. Why is it that someone comes to Krishna consciousness at a certain age, at a certain stage in life, in certain situations? Because, firstly, no one can come to Krishna consciousness without having had some contact with it before in a previous life. This is clear. Prabhupada explains in purports in the Bhagavad Gita as well. But still, some come earlier in life and some come later. It also has to do with the level of advancement we may have had in the previous life. The more advanced we were, there is a good likelihood we may come earlier in age, or even if we do come a little later, it may come with a greater intensity than it does for a normal person. And in any case, before devotional service or the inclination for that service strongly manifests in this life, one has to work out certain karma which may act as an obstacle in the path of making determined progress in Krishna consciousness. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Yesham Tvanta Gatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvanta Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mam Dhrha Vrataha. He says, one cannot perform devotional service with resolute determination unless one has been eradicated of all sins and one has sufficiently performed pious activities. By pious activities here, Krishna means the devotionally pious activities, not just mundane pious activities. So sometimes some karmic equations have to be worked out. Some suffering or whatever has to be done, something is involved, some block is there in life before one can actually come to the point of having one's Krishna consciousness awakened. At the opportune time, Srila Prabhupada says, the Krishna consciousness in the life of the devotee is suddenly awakened. There is some spark, some trigger. Some external incident apparently triggers off and reconnects that person to Krishna consciousness once again in this life. That is the turning point. We see this in the case of so many great devotees of the Lord. In the scriptures, there are innumerable such examples. Take even a case like Mrigari, who was such a cruel hunter, but who was reformed in just a short while by the grace of Narad Muni. Take the case of so many of us in ISKCON. When Prabhupada went to the West, so many young boys and girls, they came there. In this life, they had probably never heard of Krishna consciousness, or if they had, it was only some very rudimentary understanding. But somehow or other, by some stroke of exceptional fortune, they came instead of others. And that was the turning point. Everybody who has come to ISKCON has had this turning point. Prabhupada explains that what a devotee does is never lost. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktaha pranashyati. In the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna explains, tatra tam buddhi sanyogam labhate paurvadehikam. He says that whatever buddhi sanyogam was the consciousness in the previous life, the revival of consciousness takes place. Paurvadehikam, that means the previous body. Whatever was the consciousness that one had in the previous body is revived in this body, in this new life. And some incident or some intermediary or a via medium is usually employed by Krishna to trigger off and reconnect the devotee back to Krishna consciousness. Purvabhyasena tena eva riyate hyavashopisaha. Then purvabhyasena tena eva. Then according to his or her previous practice of Krishna consciousness, that particular devotee is helplessly attracted to the yogic principles, to Krishna consciousness. In one lecture, Prabhupada said, all you boys and girls, you have come here to Krishna consciousness and Krishna is keeping you here by force. There is something that is keeping you here and stopping you from going. Although many others have come and gone and many have not come at all, but you have come and there is some force that is keeping you here. That is Krishna. That force is Krishna, and it is because you have done this devotional service in your previous life. And then he quoted these verses from the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And in that lecture he gave the example of Bilwa Mangal Thakur. And he narrated this story. And he said, just like Bilwa Mangal Thakur, although he was very advanced in the previous life, but somehow or other he fell down. He could not complete his devotional service to perfection. But in the next life, he got a wonderful chance. In this way, Krishna is very merciful to his devotees. And he never lets go of a devotee. Even if somebody has done very little devotional service, Krishna will keep it in mind. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. Svalpam means very little. So with Bilwa Mangal Thakur, the turning point came on this fateful day with Chintamani. And right at that very moment, it was like a momentous hour in his life. the most important moment in his life, and immediately he resolved, enough of this life. Now I will leave home. I will renounce everything. And so strong was his determination that immediately he left. There is also one account that says that Chintamani also renounced, seeing the resolve of Bilwa Mangal to renounce. She also decided that, well, I should also do the same. So that's interesting. And then she also began to lead a kind of ascetic life. Subsequently, there is some confusion about the chronology of events in Bilwa Mangal Thakur's life. It is not exactly clear in what way he actually progressed in his spiritual development, at least externally. However, from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's commentary, we get a hint, because Kaviraj Goswami says that first he was a materialistic person, given to all kinds of sense enjoyment, then he became an impersonalist, and then he became a devotee. Later, when he is in his Mangalacharan of the Krishna Karnamrita, which we will be reading later, he mentions Chintamani also as his Vartma Pradarshak Guru, the Guru who shows the way. And later he mentions his initiating Guru Somagiri. Somagiri came from the Advaita school, I believe. So that means it must have come after this episode with Chintamani. So having renounced, he took Diksha or initiation from Somagiri. And he also wrote a book called the Shanti Shatak. Prabhupada mentions this in a purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And at that time, very strong impulses began to manifest in his heart. These impulses were connected to Vrindavan. The mood of Vrindavan now began to be manifest very strongly from within, although he was externally in an impersonalistic pursuit. And he began composing beautiful stanzas and poetry glorifying Krishna in Vrindavan. So beautiful and natural were his compositions, which he did in the service of his guru, Somagiri, that Somagiri was very happy and impressed and gave him the title Leela Shuka. So Bilwa Mangal Thakur is also known as Leela Shuka. Actually, historians say that there are other Bilwa Mangals also who lived around the same period. But in order to distinguish our Bilwa Mangal from other Bilwa Mangals, he is also called Leela Shuka. Somagiri gave him the name Leela Shuka because of his expertise in expounding and delineating the wonderful pastimes or leelas of Krishna. It is said that a parrot, when he tastes a fruit, that fruit becomes more delicious, more tasty. Similarly, when a pure devotee, after hearing the pastimes of Krishna, describes these pastimes, then those pastimes become even sweeter because they have been relished by that great exalted soul, like Shukadev Goswami. Shukamukhat amrita dravasamyutam. So because the Bhagavatam has come from the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami, it has become even sweeter. That which was already sweet has become even sweeter. So Bilwa Mangal Thakur's compositions were so sweet and full of nectar that he was like a transcendental parrot, like another Shukadeva Goswami. So the name was quite appropriate. At this time, having had the mood of Vrindavan strongly manifesting within his heart, he desired to go to Vrindavan. So upon being so petitioned by Bilwa Mangal, Somagiri gave him the permission. Yes, you go ahead to Vrindavan. And Bilva Mangal began the long journey from South India to Vrindavan. Now we must remember that in those days there was no trains and aeroplanes. So whatever journeys were done, they had to be done by foot mostly. So he began the journey, but as Prabhupada explains, that he was not yet fully purified, and therefore because of his past habits, he was still somewhat in one corner of his heart attracted to the idea of enjoying with the opposite sex. One time, as he, in the course of his travel towards Vrindavan, he happened to see a very beautiful lady who was a wife of a Brahmana, and he began to follow her. And this lady noticed that this sadhu, who looks very cultured and aristocratic and very learned, he is following me everywhere. This is a little unusual. So she went and told this to her husband. And her husband went and asked Bilva Mangal, "My dear sir, why is it that you are following my wife like this?" So Bilva Mangal was so captivated by the beauty of this lady that he said to the husband, "Because I want to be with her." So because he was a sadhu, in a very unusual display of reverence, the husband said, the Brahmana said, "All right, come." And he told his wife, "Please prepare to be with him." And when the lady came, he experienced a very intense feeling of remorse at what he had said and what he had done. So when the lady came, then Bilva Mangal Thakur asked her, first of all, Prabhupada says, he addressed her as mother. Earlier, he was not looking at her as mother, but now he had again a transformation in his heart. And the first thing that he said when she came in front of him was, "Mother." So obviously now it was again a different Bilva Mangal who was in front of this lady. And he said, "Mother, please give me your hairpins." The lady was a little puzzled as to why Bilva Mangal Thakur wanted hairpins. Anyway, very obediently, she took out a pin from her hair and gave it to Bilva Mangal. And right in front of her very shocked eyes, and in front of the husband of the lady, he gouged out his eyes. He took the hairpins and plucked out his eyes. And naturally, it was a very gory sight. And then he said, "These eyes are my enemies. They are preventing me from going to Vrindavan, from being with Krishna. They are attracting me to the objects of this world. They are blocking me from obtaining the goal of my life, Krishna." And so he did this, which was very, very unusual, very extraordinary, not to be imitated. And he became blind, naturally. The Brahmana couple were shocked beyond words. They did not know what to say. But without further ado, it is said that Bilva Mangal left and he departed towards Vrindavan. But now he was blind, and therefore he could not find his own way. So he had to rely upon others who would help him. And along the way, he happened to make friendship with one boy who was walking along. And this boy was always talking very sweetly to him and holding his hand and guiding him along the long route. And they were having nice conversations together. And this friendship continued for a long time, for many days. Eventually, at some point, the flash of realization dawned in Bilva Mangal Thakur's mind that this boy was none other than Krishna. And when Vrindavan was approaching, then this young boy, that is Krishna, left him He wanted to go, but Bilwa Mangal didn't want him to go. So he kept him, he kept holding him. But somehow the other, Krishna, escaped from the clutches of Bilwa Mangal, because Vrindavan was approaching. At that time, Bilwa Mangal, because he wasn't able to see, was throwing his hands around here and there, trying to somehow or other catch Krishna again. But Krishna was nowhere to be found. And at that time, he recited a very beautiful verse. Probably this verse came at this time. And it's a very beautiful verse where he says, Hastam utkshipyatosi balat krishna kimadbhutam hridayani yadmeyasi aurushan ganayamite. O Krishna, it is really astonishing. Is it really astonishing? If you can give up holding my hand, I will consider you a real man if you can take yourself from my heart. He said, Krishna, it's not a big deal that you escaped from my hands. Hastam utkshipya yatosi balat. Forcefully, you have extricated yourself from my grip. Kim adbhutam. What's the astonishing thing about that? That's not very creditable on your part. It's not any exhibition of great power just to escape from my physical clutches. But if you really have any power, if you are really a man, you want to show that you are really a man, then hridayad yadi niryasi, if you can escape from my heart, then I will understand that you are something, that you have some power, some strength. It's a very beautiful verse, because it explains to us that ultimately we are not so much concerned with seeing and contacting Krishna physically. Rather, we are more concerned with keeping Krishna in our heart. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us, particularly we should remember Krishna in a mood of separation. Not that, as Prabhupada says, and as some sahajiyas do, they look under the bushes and say, I have found Krishna. Devotee never says, yes, I have found Krishna. Prabhupada says the six Goswamis would always be moving around in Vrindavan saying, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He Radhe Vrajadevi Keche Lalite He Nanda Suno Kutaha Ghoshanta Iti Sarvato Vrajapure. So they would go announcing like this everywhere, all over Vraja, where is Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj? So that mood of separation is more important to cultivate than just the mood to see Krishna. Although in that mood of separation, the longing to see Krishna is also very natural. And Krishna Karnamrit of Bilwa Mangal Thakur also has many wonderful verses. We will see some of these verses if time permits today, otherwise tomorrow. So having said this, Bilwa Mangal continued his journey and he arrived at Vrindavan, and he lived at Brahmakund, and there he was doing austerities. Because he was blind, he was not able to take care of himself and his physical needs properly, especially his food. So there one young boy came to him and befriended him, and he said, my dear Babaji, who are you? And why is it that you are fasting like this? Nobody fasts here. So I will bring you milk every day. I am a cowherd boy and I am from here. I am a local boy from here. So who was this cowherd boy? Again, Krishna. So every day Krishna would come and give him some milk. And in this way, Bilwa Mangal Thakur relished this nectar, this nectarian milk that was personally provided by Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye janaha paryupasate तेषां नित्याभियुक्तानां योगक्षेमं वहाम्यहम्. He says, for those who are constantly thinking about me, absorbed in contemplation about me, who very faithfully serve me and worship me, for them I personally preserve what they have and carry what they lack. So this is a devotee's faith. A devotee does not overly endeavor for material requirements. A devotee has faith that Krishna will provide personally. Of course, since we are not on the level of Bilwa Mangal Thakur, we cannot artificially deprive ourselves of the basic bodily necessities like food. But nevertheless, it's something that is of some inspirational value, and certainly something that should be of that we should be philosophically also convinced about. So Krishna would come to Bilwa Mangal Thakur and he would give him the milk, but he would never touch him. And from a distance he would talk with Bilwa Mangal, he would dance in front of Bilwa Mangal, he would sing and do everything, but there was no touch. He would not allow Bilwa Mangal to touch him. And many times, because Bilwa Mangal would compose beautiful verses, many of the Krishna Karnamrita verses probably were composed in Vrindavan, and many were composed on the journey between South India and Vrindavan. So when often Bilwa Mangal would sing very melodiously different verses and songs about Krishna. And although Krishna is all-powerful, but the love of his devotees and the glorification that the devotees do of Krishna is so powerful that Krishna is helplessly attracted to that place. Wherever Krishna is being glorified, Krishna immediately becomes present there. Naham tishthami vaikunthe yoginam hridayeshuva yatra gayanti madbhaktah tatra tishthami narada. So it is explained, Krishna says himself that I don't live in Vaikuntha, I don't live in the hearts of the yogis, but I am there where my devotees are always chanting my glories. So because Bilwa Mangal Thakur was constantly chanting about Krishna, beautiful songs, beautiful verses, most of them his own compositions. So Krishna would leave everything, whatever else he was doing, and he would come there. And he would hear. This is the power of glorification of Krishna, Krishna Katha and Krishna Sankirtan. The tendency of Krishna to be attracted to where his glorification is going on is natural. Even if we are passing by a group of devotees and we hear our name being mentioned and we hear that this group of devotees is talking about us, it's natural for us to go and want to hear what they are saying about us. It's there in Krishna as well. But it's there in Krishna in fulfillment, in perfection. Glorification of Krishna pleases Krishna because it is something factual. When we hear ourselves being praised, we may also become pleased. But that is like poison, because it only strengthens our false ego and our false connection to this illusion that I am this body and this material world is for my enjoyment and I am the enjoyer. So Krishna becomes very, very attracted and he would come there and chat with Bilwa Mangal, and sometimes he would just quietly hear Bilwa Mangal's songs. Also, it was around this time probably that he composed the verse that we recited yesterday about liberation, standing with folded hands at his doorstep. Muktihi svayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmartha kama gataya samaya pratikshaha. That for a devotee, Mukti Devi personally stands with folded hands at his doorstep, along with mundane religiosity, economic development and sense gratification. They are patiently waiting although the devotee doesn't have any time for them, he is not interested in them. And Prabhupada makes a beautiful comment in this regard. He says, for Bilwa Mangal Thakur, Krishna was personally coming to give him milk every day. So what need was there for him to want mukti, liberation? What was the value of liberation for one to whom Krishna personally comes to give milk? So in this way, Bilwa Mangal Thakur spent many years here. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is narrating the ecstatic transformations that took place in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine body, he justifies it by giving the example of Leela Shuka. And he says, Leela Shuka Martya Jana Tara E Bhava Udgama. He says, Leela Shuka or Bilwa Mangal Thakur is a Martya Jana. He is a mortal. He is an ordinary human being. And even in his body, Bhava Udgama, the Bhava Bhakti, the ecstatic symptoms of devotion were manifesting. So what then to speak of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is directly Ishvara or Krishna? Krishna has come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to relish these devotional mellows. And he is exhibiting these devotional symptoms and ecstatic symptoms in a way that has never been seen in the history of creation. So what is so surprising? Even if Leela Shuka could exhibit extraordinary symptoms, why not the Supreme Lord? In other words, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is really glorifying Bilwa Mangal Thakur's advanced stage of development. He came a long way from being a materialist to an impersonalist to a devotee who was practicing to one who eventually reached the highest stages of devotion. Now we have some sheets here. I have compiled some verses from the Krishna Karnamrita, the famous work of Bilwa Mangal Thakur, which have been quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita mostly, and about two or three from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but mostly from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I have picked out these verses and we will read some of them now. So can you please distribute these? Half can go at the back and half here. You may have to share. We have only about 60 or 70 sets, so please share amongst yourselves, two or three each. Before any work is begun, like a literary work, like a poem, a novel, a drama, or even a lecture, there is an auspicious invocation, which is called a Mangalacharan. Mangal means auspicious. So, in Krishna Karnamrita, Bilwa Mangal Thakur, in his invocation, he offers his respects to his three gurus. That's the very first verse we have here in this list. And this verse is quoted in the first chapter of the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a very philosophical section where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is talking about the different kinds of gurus. He explains Guru Tattva, the truth about the guru. And he says that actually there are three types of gurus. Can you give to everybody who doesn't have? extra. Some grown-up can give it. If there are extra, distribute to everybody who wants. Anybody needs the sheep, please raise your hand and he will come and give you. Actually, the tattva is that the Adi Guru or the original Guru is Krishna. And Krishna empowers suitable beings, empowered beings in this world to be his representatives for the deliverance of fallen souls, conditioned souls in this world. And there are different types of gurus. One is called the Vartma Pradarshak Guru, the person who shows the way. That person may not be very advanced at all. There are so many instances of this, where somebody may tell us, you know, well, why don't you go to this Hare Krishna temple close by, there's some nice programs going on, but actually I don't go there, but it's a nice place, you go. And that person goes and he becomes a devotee and dedicates his life to Krishna, and the person who showed him the path is still somewhat entangled in the world outside. But nevertheless, Krishna has used that person as an instrument to bring him to Krishna. Vartma means road or path. Pradarshak means one who shows, lights up, so to speak, the way, exhibits guru. The second kind of guru is called Shiksha Guru, one who gives instruction. There can be innumerable Shiksha Gurus that we may have. There may be many Vartma Pradarshak Gurus also. But Diksha Guru is usually one. Diksha Guru is the one from whom we take initiation, who formally initiates the devotee and connects the devotee to the parampara coming from Krishna. So now in this Mangalacharan verse, Bilwa Mangal Thakur is offering his respects to his three kinds of gurus. And what's the very first name you find there? Chintamani. So he didn't forget Chintamani's contribution to his spiritual life. And first of all, he glorifies Chintamani. So let us chant this verse. Chintamani Jayati Somagirir Gurur Me. Shiksha Gurushya Bhagavan Shikhipincha Maulihi. Yat Pada Kalpataru Pallava Shikhareshu. Leela Swayamvara Rasam Labhate Jaya Shri. Chintamanir Jayati Somagirir Gurur Me. Shiksha Gurushya Bhagavan Shikhipincha Maulihi. Yat Pada Kalpataru Pallava Shekhareshu. Leela Swayamvara Rasam Labhate Jaya Shri. One or two, you can chant this verse. Chintamani Jayati Somagirir Gurur Me. Shiksha Gurushya Bhagavan Shikhipincha Maulihi. Yat Pada Kalpataru Pallava Shekhareshu. Leela Swayamvara Rasam Labhate Jaya Shri. Chintamanir Jayati Somagrir Gurur Me. Shiksha Gurusha Bhagavan Shikipinsha Maulihi. Yatpada Palpataru Pallava Shekhareshu. Lila Swayamvara Rasam Labhate Jayashri. All glories to Chintamani and my initiating spiritual master Somagiri. All glories to my instructing spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who wears peacock feathers in his crown. Under the shade of his lotus feet, which are like desire trees, Jayashri, Radharani, enjoys the transcendental mellow of an eternal consort. So Bilva Mangal begins by saying, Chintamani Jayati. All glories to Chintamani. Why? Because she is my Vartma Pradarshak Guru. She has shown me the path. I was absorbed in the deep dark well of materialistic life, but she shook me up and guided me to go to Krishna. After that, now he took initiation. He went further ahead in his spiritual life. He took Diksha. So he says, Somagirir Gurur Me. My initiating spiritual master is Somagiri. So who was the Shiksha Guru? Who was his instructing spiritual master? Directly Krishna. Because Krishna walked with him to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan also Krishna would come, give him milk, talk to him, sing for him, dance for him. And he would be with him. So he says here, Shiksha Guruscha Bhagavan. My Shiksha Guru is Bhagavan directly. Which Bhagavan is he talking about? Shikhi Pincha Maulihi. That Bhagavan whose crown or whose hair is adorned with a peacock feather. And whose lotus feet, yad pada, kalpataru pallava, shekhareshu. Whose lotus feet are like desire trees, kalpataru. And pallava shekhareshu. And the grass that is found at the toenails, that shelter is a shelter of Leela Swayamvara Rasam Labhate Jayashrihi. Jayashrihi, Shri means Lakshmi generally, but the original Shri is Radharani. So here Bilva Mangal Thakur is not referring to Lakshmi Devi of Vaikuntha, but directly to Srimati Radharani. And he says that Srimati Radharani, under the shade of his lotus feet, is enjoying the transcendental mellow of the Madhuri Ras, Leela Swayamvara Rasam Labhate. She obtains that. So here, Bilva Mangal Thakur has talked about his three kinds of gurus. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami uses this verse to illustrate these three gurus. The principle of these three gurus, Vartma Pradarshak Guru, Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru. Of course, there is also another type of guru. Who is that? Chaitya Guru. Chaitya Guru means one who is in the chitta, in the consciousness or in the heart. That's the Paramatma. The Lord is in the heart as a super soul and is giving everyone guidance. From within. Even the atheist is being guided by the Lord from inside. What to speak of the devotees? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that for those who are constantly engaged in serving me, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. I seated in their hearts, destroy their ignorance with the lamp of knowledge. Tesham evanukam partham aham ajnanajam tamaha. Nashayami bhavastho jnana deepena bhasvata. So in this way, the Lord is also the Guru in the heart. He is the Guru within, and that same Supreme Lord also manifests externally in the personality of certain individuals whom He sends for our deliverance from this material existence. So in the course of this very deep and wonderful analysis of the Guru Tattva, in the first chapter of the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has quoted this particular verse. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada speaks also extensively about Bilvamangal Thakur's story, especially of how he was guided by Chintamani at that fateful day. And he explains how important the role of a guru is in the life of a devotee. He says the guru is responsible for delivering his disciple and for reconnecting him to Krishna, to send him back to Godhead. So the duty or responsibility of a guru is very, very great, very heavy. So Prabhupada says, therefore one should not give the spiritual master trouble. In what way? One should try to become a pure devotee in this life and go back to Godhead immediately at the end of this life. Prabhupada said, My Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, used to say, finish this business in this life. Don't delay for the next life. So Prabhupada says, don't think, because the spiritual master is committed to delivering the disciple, even if the disciple takes many more lives, that we should take advantage of this little principle. We should not think, Prabhupada says, that because even if I take birth again, the spiritual master will come to deliver me, it's all right. I can take it easy. So Prabhupada says, no, we should be very responsible. We should serve and do our Krishna consciousness in such a sincere way that we don't have to be born again, that the Guru does not have to come in the next life to deliver us again, to reclaim us. So in what way does the Guru come in later lives? Prabhupada gives the example of Bilvamangal Thakur. He says, the Guru is so merciful that he can even speak through the mouth of a prostitute, like he did in the case of Chintamani speaking to Bilvamangal Thakur. So it is not necessary that that particular jiva whom one understands to be a guru will come physically and reclaim in the subsequent lives. Prabhupada is talking about a larger principle of the Guru Tattva. And personally also, the Guru is very much concerned even from the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada is very much watching over our ISKCON movement, and he is looking at each of us and seeing where we are going, what we are doing and what we are not doing, and where we are headed in the next life. He very much wants that we should make it in this life itself, not postpone it for the next life. And Prabhupada says, we should make sure that we don't give trouble to the Guru, to make the Guru come in a different form or in some way to reclaim us again in the next life. So Prabhupada gives many interesting perspectives. When he narrates a story, he takes so many, he sees it from so many different angles and explains various philosophical points in a very deep way. So from this verse, Chintamani Jayati, we can understand how Bilvamangal Thakur was so grateful for the help that he received from Chintamani, even from Somagiri. Ultimately, his real guru was Krishna, because he was the one who revealed everything to him about Vrindavan. Now there's many more verses to chant. What we will do is, we will leave some of these verses for tomorrow. We will chant them and speak briefly. And tomorrow we will also hear about some of the other great acharyas who were adored and revered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is not so much available about them in the historical records, but whatever briefly is there, we will discuss. That is about Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Second, there is Chandidas, and third, Vidyapati. Their poems were heard very faithfully and devotionally by Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, especially during his Antya Leela. So that's what we are going to do tomorrow. Hear about these three great saints and also further discuss some of these verses briefly from the Krishna Karnamrita. And when you go home today to your room, please go through this. Very beautiful. Try to chant them and try to read the translation and try to meditate upon these beautiful verses which also appear in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions? Is there any record of what happened to Chintamani subsequently? Not that I know of. All I have heard and read is that she also took to a life of renunciation. She took to a deeply spiritual life after this incident. But we presume that because of her connection to Bilwa Mangal Thakur, who was a great devotee, and because Bilwa Mangal Thakur held her in such high regard, having glorified her here as his Vartma Pradarshak Guru, definitely she would have attained some exalted destination. Because wherever a pure devotee looks, whoever a pure devotee reveres is also definitely the object of Krishna's mercy. Any other question or comment? Yes. Can there be many Diksha Gurus? Generally, no. That is the general principle. Shiksha Gurus can be many, but Diksha is generally only one. I didn't hear that. Well, you see, there are different sampradayas, and different sampradayas have different understandings of what Diksha really means. So in Ramanuja, we find that he took mantra from so many great personalities. But nevertheless, the way we understand it from the Gaudiya Vaishnava parampara, Diksha is taken only from one personality. And Shiksha may be taken from many. Our parampara is also largely Shiksha. The connection between many of our gurus in the line that you find in the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction at the end, that is to a large extent a Shiksha parampara. Yes. I didn't hear. Can you speak up? The question is, was Somagiri the initiating guru of Bilwa Mangal Thakur, was he an Advaitavadi? It may be, although in another place Prabhupada says that Bilwa Mangal Thakur was the chief disciple of Vishnu Swami, which is a Vaishnava sampradaya, bona fide. But it is also mentioned that he was earlier quite an advanced impersonalist. So we are not clear about the spiritual affiliations of Somagiri. It is not so clear. The records are a little hazy on this. But regardless, he played an important role in Bilwa Mangal Thakur's life. He appreciated very much his exquisite poetry on Krishna Leela in Vrindavan. And he actually blessed him to go to Vrindavan. So in that sense, we can say that he played a very important role. Any other questions? Yes. The question is that if we continue Krishna consciousness in this life from the previous life, that there is something that triggers off, so to speak, our Krishna consciousness in this life, what then is the role of a preacher? If Krishna is going to trigger in some way through some medium, what is the role of a preacher? The answer is very simple, that the preacher is that trigger. The preacher could be the trigger, either willingly, unwillingly, knowingly, unknowingly. We all came to Krishna consciousness by meeting some preacher or some book. Somebody was distributing some book somewhere. Somebody was speaking about Krishna somewhere. We came in touch. So Krishna brings us in touch with his devotees. That is a sign that we are ready now. However, even though we may be ready, there may still be some stumbling blocks in becoming very determined in the practice of our Krishna consciousness. So you see that there will be many who come in contact with devotees but don't become very staunch devotees. They remain lukewarm or they remain on the fringe. There are some who at the very first instance or first contact or the first book they read, they suddenly become very staunch, or they take to it very quickly, or even if they take a little time, but when they do take it, they take it very seriously. So it's all very complex because it's all coming from so many lifetimes. We don't know who has done what kind of spiritual development in the previous lives. Therefore, we should never underestimate the power of a preacher, because Krishna uses his devotees as instruments, and not just his devotees, sometimes he may use non-devotees as instruments to teach many lessons to devotees. Many times devotee preachers, book distributors, they have many shiksha gurus amongst the atheistic population, because these shiksha gurus teach them humility and tolerance. They insult them, they abuse them, they do so many things. So they are directly sent by Krishna to teach some lessons to the devotees so that they can advance in their spiritual life. And at the same time, these people can also get a chance to come in contact with the devotee, and if by chance they favorably take to it, then their life becomes successful. So see here, the Vartma Pradarshak Guru was a prostitute, not a preacher, but she was preaching actually. She preached to him. So Krishna can speak through anyone at any time. Any other questions? Yes. How can we draw inspiration from the example of Bilva Mangal Thakur and Chintamani? How can we draw inspiration? Okay, the question is that it was mentioned in the course of describing Bilva Mangal Thakur's determination to reach Chintamani at any cost on that fateful night, it was mentioned in the lecture that we can take inspiration about how, if that kind of absorption in the goal was there for Krishna, then how much more it would have, how much it will benefit us in our Krishna consciousness. And that indeed was exactly the message that Chintamani gave to Bilwa Mangal Thakur. That the same resolute determination you have for coming to me, if you had that for Krishna, you would have become a great devotee by now. So therefore we can understand that the destination we obtain is based on our absorption. What are we absorbed in? If we are absorbed in sense gratification, our destination will remain within this world. If we are absorbed in Krishna, then Krishna's abode will be our destination. So the more intense our absorption, the more easily we can go back to Krishna at the end of this life. So that must be our endeavor, our attempt. Okay? So thank you very much. We will meet tomorrow at 5:30. Shri Bilwa Mangal Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanande. So you can keep these sheets with you, but please bring them tomorrow. We will not be distributing them again. So please bring. Hare Krishna.